from the underground.
Welcome back to the Sports Hub Underground. This is Matt Dolliffe, and I am here with Ty Anderson, as we are every single week at 98.5 The Sports Hub, except for last week, of course, because I was on vacation, but took a little week off, took some time off. I'm back, I'm reinvigorated, and I'm just as crazy as before, if not crazier. Ty, good to see you.
What's up? Thanks for taking a vacation the week where the Bruins did everything in the world.
Yeah, no, that was perfect.
That was great. I love that.
I planned that impeccably.
I hope you can do that again next time.
It's funny, like I just said, like, yeah, I'll just take the All-Star week. And I didn't realize that they pushed the All-Star break back a week later than they usually do.
Right.
So, yeah, I kind of screwed you guys there, but you made it. You did fine. You put up the numbers.
I always put the numbers.
Ty's always putting up stats when it comes to the website.
My analytics are elite.
Elite analytics for Ty. You know, he's an analytics darling. He's the Louis Erickson of page views. Yeah, there's a lot to catch up on, obviously, but we don't have to dive right in right away. We gotta settle in here because, you know, I have a little rust. We gotta get back to talking about just whatever. So
yeah, what's up?
What have you been up to past week while I was out?
Not much. I explore my neighborhood now. That's what I'm doing like every day. We've talked about this a little bit, but I've never lived in Brighton. This is my first time living in Brighton. But Brighton is very close to Watertown and to Newton and to all these other towns.
Oh, yeah.
So I was always like a North Shore street trash. So I don't know these areas that well. So I've been walking around. I tried Korean food. Korean place.
Ooh, Italian food.
Right. Ooh, speggy and marbles. No, but I'm really enjoying it. I found a new taco place that I like, which I'm really excited about because that was my big concern, not being able to find a Mexican place I liked.
What's it called?
It's called Amelia's.
Amelia's.
It's really
good. I know Amelia's.
Oh, my God. It's really good.
It's a little down the road, right?
It's a little bit down there. It's like a 15-minute walk from where I live. Maybe closer to 20.
Oh, okay.
But this time of year, that's great. You know, you get out, you walk a little bit. But I noticed that we were walking the day of the Jim Montgomery press conference. We also had dev camp. So I was like, crap, how are we going to get there? How are we going to get from Warrior to TD Garden on a Monday at 2 p.m.?
Of course.
And I didn't want to take a car because then you got to pay for parking. So I walked from Warrior to Harvard Ave Green Line, jumped on there, and I got to the garden. But I walked by this place as I was doing that, and I was like, well, this place intrigues me. And then I Googled the menu, and I was like, I got to try this place. And then I got it the next night, and it was great. I love it. So now I have to not get it every day, or else I'll gain 45 pounds.
Right. Now, if I remember correctly, Amelia's the bread that they use for their burritos or whatever, top notch.
Yeah,
pita bread.
Yeah,
know?
So I've done the chimichangas.
Okay, same thing. Like whatever the outer layer.
It
was
top notch
for my you know.
Yeah, I love
which
their,
you don't usually
the hot
notice,
sauce.
You know?
That's the hot sauce has been good because it's hot without making you go, oh, this just tastes bad.
Right, right. It's like, not hot. It's not to the point of being unpleasant. That would be my thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's my biggest thing. Like Buffalo Wild Wings, that place is trash because they're like hot wings. They don't taste anything besides hot, and hot is not a good flavor. It's just gross.
What are you, a pussy? You don't like heat?
No, I like heat, but it's got to have some taste to it.
I wasn't seriously asking.
No, but like that's the thing, though. I think there's too much. Like they're like, it's got to be unpleasantly hot. It's like,
right,
oh man,
no.
I don't want that. It's got to have some flavor to it, still.
Right, seriously, we need to make you sweat out 10 pounds, no problem. Yeah, no, I get it.
What have you been doing though?
Well, I just want real quick. I want to recommend a place to you. S&I to go is the name of the place. It's Thai food. And I used to live right in that area.
Thai food.
I used to live on Gardner Street in Alston, which is right near all a bunch of little restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alston Brighton area, very short walk from where you live, I believe. Award-winning Thai place. Go try their pad Thai. That's my recommendation to you.
All right.
And there's another place, but I want to check and see if it's still around. But I'll let you know. I'll bring it up on next week's episode.
You know,
so shout out to Amelia's Taqueria. Give us some free food. How's that sound?
You know how you know when a restaurant is good? A Chinese food restaurant or any restaurant, when you walk in and the pictures on the wall are like faded green.
Oh, yeah. No, it looks like light bright.
Yeah.
Or like one of those like tracing things.
The pitchers have been around since 1998. They don't have to change the menu because it's that good.
1988, 78. They haven't had to change a thing.
Yeah. Like, I'll get that combo from 1999 that you've never gotten rid of.
So, like, so what's the General Gals like? They just point at the picture.
Yeah.
It's like, I wasn't alive when that picture was taken. So I need a better image of that. So that's good. That's good that you're exploring the neighborhood. It's a good time of the year to explore, except this week because it's 1,000 degrees every day.
Oh, I love No. I love walking in this weather. Because then you get home, you turn on the AC, and you're like the most comfortable you've ever been in your entire life.
Okay. Well, that's like saying you love holding in a pee because when you finally release the pee, it's the best feeling in the world.
That is also true.
Okay, so we agree.
I've had to hold in many a pees in my time because I don't use public restrooms because they're disgusting.
Fair enough.
That is hard. Like, it's a men's room is like the most disgusting thing on planet Earth.
Well, what's wrong with the Revere Beach bathroom there?
Why is it that just men just miss when they get into public restrooms? They just start missing. It's like they become the worst kicker in the NFL all of a sudden.
Yes.
Yeah, just like, what are you doing, man? Come on.
Yeah, I'll make 10 cups in a row in beer pong, but then when I have to go take a piss.
It's disgusting.
You got to use a whole roll of Bounty towels to clean up after.
One of the funnier office things is there's a clip where Michael walks out of the women's bathroom and the camera focuses on the women's bathroom sign on the door. And it cuts back to him and goes, the men's room was disgusting. And he walks away. Like, that's how I feel. It's always so gross. I can't do it.
Men are gross. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Even if we try to be clean, like, it's like this time of year, I think we've talked about it before. I'm like a two-shower guy this time of year. I'm going to go home and take a shower because I just living, I'll sweat and be disgusting by the end of the day in weather like this.
Yeah, I've actually found these new things that I love. For days when I don't want to take a shower or I got to go on a rush, I'm in a rush. They got these, you wipe your arms with them and under your arms, you smell great. It's like taking a shower. I don't know what they're called.
But dude wipes? Something like that?
No. Because I think those wipes. Are for your butt. I think those
are
for your butt.
For the toilet.
No, they got one that's like a, I don't know, it's like a, it's almost like
But it's
a,
wipes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But they're almost like, they're like invigorating, like they're supposed to like, wake you up a little bit, so they're great for when you're like running late for practice or something like that.
I know, we'll find out who it is and then reach out to them, get them to sponsor the pod, make us a little cash on the side, maybe some free products.
I actually got us a sponsor.
You did?
Yeah.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Tell us about our fine sponsor.
So I was talking with these guys online. So we got the sponsor, Surge Soda and DZ Discovery Zone are going to be sponsoring us full time now. These companies are very profitable from what I've gathered.
Yeah, I'm going to be reaching out to Circuit City in a couple days. I'll let you know how that goes.
Dude, how is a Circuit City that's in Somerville not anything still? It's still
that's
Circuit
awesome.
City.
That's awesome. The giant like Circuit City plug is still there. I love
yeah,
that.
Like nothing has taken over that spot.
I'm so tempted to like break into there and see how many like transients are hanging out.
I want to do that with Waylu's. Remember Waylu's on Route 1? It was not Kowloon. It was the Chinese restaurant before Kowloon, and it had a big pond on the inside. And for years, it was just there, and it was closed.
I don't think I ever went. I never went to Kowloon until, like, high school, so I probably missed that other place.
Since we're talking about here, can we talk about the top place that I'd ever want to break into? And I feel like you would like this, too. Six Flags New Orleans. Have you seen photos of this place?
New Orleans. I went to New Orleans one year. We should have gone.
So Six Flags, there used to be Six Flags there. It got royally messed up during Katrina.
Oh, Katrina, so it's abandoned now?
And they never reopened. But it looks like the set of like a haunted like movie set. Like it looks so sick, and I would love to go in there. But with my luck, there's like gators and stuff in there now. And
right?
Like,
no,
you
yeah,
can't
they're,
go
just,
in
they're
there.
Literally just walking around.
Yeah,
they're walking on just their hind feet.
But if
they're
you
like
get
human gators, somehow.
If you can find the photo gallery online, I think like a website took like thousands of photos from there. It's so cool looking. Like it's so decrepit. But it's like
cool looking for like a morbid, morbid way.
It's like dystopian, and I like anything that's dystopian, which is great for me living in 2022 world.
Perfect. This you must love the world.
This is my this is my zone. I'm in the chaos realm.
Hence, discovery zone. Ty is in his discovery zone right now.
It's true.
So I mean, that might be a good big three idea. Like places we'd like to have to ourselves for a day.
Yeah.
Or places, I guess places we'd like to break into.
I used to do that with the Boston Bruins in 2006-07. There was nobody there except me, baby.
There you go. That was a great year.
Brad Isbister. What's up, man? Like just having the worst
Isbister,
time.
What a name. Let me tell you what I was up to over the break, Ty. I didn't do anything crazy. I didn't go on like a big vacation or anything like that. I gotta start saving money better so I can actually do something actually fun. You know, I had a couple rounds of golf. I still want to get you out on the links. You, me, and Barth got to get a round in. I promise it'll be good for content. If you have to rent clubs, that's fine. But we got to do it. We're gonna do it just one time. We'll figure it. We'll figure something out there. But I wanted to get your input on this thing because part of the vacation last week, part of the reason I took the whole week off is because I had a bunch of family stuff. And one of them was the annual Dollar Family summer barbecue, summer party, whatever you want to call it. That it's just my dad's side of the family, but we've made it like an annual thing. And what we do every year as part of it is we have a cornhole tournament. And, you know, everybody puts in a few bucks. And so, you know, winner take all, it's fun. But there was this one team. It's my cousin and her husband, my two cousins. They win every year, no problem. They dominate. They're just too good. They're way better than everybody else. We tried different things. We tried breaking them up, but they're like their teams would just make it. And, you know, there would be years where we just gave up trying to break them up. They'd be a team. They'd win no problem. And so what my dad decided to do this year, my dad's like the commissioner of the whole thing. And he says, all right, we need to give them a handicap. You know, let's call them John and Jane. So I don't know if they want to know, put their names out there. So let's give John and Jane a handicap. And so what he had was he put a list of handicaps, sort of like if you spun a wheel to figure out your handicap, and you put him in a hat and you pull it out. John's handicap was he spots the other team 5 points, which in a game of cornhole that goes to 11 is like devastating.
Yeah.
He immediately lost. And Jane's handicap, what was it? Oh, yeah. She had to shoot from behind the board. So you know how in cornhole you can stand next to the board?
Mm-hmm.
She had to stand like a few feet back behind the boards, like sort of throwing down the middle. And Jane's team actually made it to the finals but ended up losing. And they were raising all hell about the handicap and the rules and all that. You know, they're saying maybe we need a new commissioner. And I was like, oh, take it easy. We're not doing that. But what do you think? Do you think that's fair? Like, if there's a team that where you have an annual event and it's one team winning every year, you know, that sort of sucks. You don't want the same team winning every year. But how do you stop that? What would you do to mitigate that?
I'd get better. That's not their fault. They're so good. That's
John
not their fault.
John and Jane are going to love that.
I mean, no. You softened what would have been a momentous moment for when they finally did get beaten by somebody. Because now it's not, I don't know, it's like, oh, I won, but
it's been
like
12 years.
I won, but yeah, that's like, we won one time in the Street Hockey League, we won a championship because the other team forfeited. And I was like, well, that's not fun, I want to play the game. It's kind of similar vibes, I would want to play the game. You play to win the game. That's
right,
like,
no, it is reminiscent of like when the Patriots were winning too much, so like, no, you can't hit the receiver anymore.
Right.
Because Ronnie Harrison was putting guys in the
hospital.
Congrats
to the rest of your family for being the Indianapolis Colts. Congrats.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, my dad's Bill Polian. Thanks, Dad.
Makes you Tony Dungy.
But I was thinking, like, I don't know. I feel like we should handicap them because they are that much better. It's just a fun family thing, you know? I want to give everybody a chance to win and all that. But, I mean, the guy having to spot 5 points was too much. He had no
That's
chance.
Too much.
He immediately lost.
You know, that's too much of a handicap. It should be like you got to throw your left hand instead of your
right. Right. I thought it was going to be something goofy, like they had to play blindfolded.
Yeah.
Play, you know, yeah, throw left-handed, throw with your offhand.
Forget to break their hands before they throw.
Yeah, throw with your feet. Yeah. If you make it in the hole, you lose a finger.
They got to throw with their feet like they're Sebulba from Phantom Menace.
If you get more than one in the hole, you get the hammer. Yeah. No, like, I don't know. But they were also saying, like, we should do, like, a loser's bracket and consolation rounds and things like that. Because we just do the tournament. You know, and so like by the end, it's like it's just this one game, and then it's over, and then there's no more cornhole. But I guess we should try to do a loser's bracket, and then we could have rankings at the end. You know,
you should do double elimination. That's what you should do.
That's what we did. Yeah, it was single elimination. So that's a good point.
Yeah.
Double elimination would sort of at least it would give a more of a chance to everybody else. I would think.
I don't know. I think the commissioner went a little too far.
Is he overstepping his reach with the rule
Roger
changes?
Goodell giving Tom Brady 4 games. That's what that is. That's what that is, in my opinion.
Mickey Mouse.
Huh.
Yeah, well, you know, it is. We are close. It's closer to WWE than a real, you know, sporting league, I would say.
Yeah, so are you Pat Patterson, Gerald Briscoe? Are you the stooge carrying out the orders?
Yeah, no. Yeah, my dad and I actually
Sergeant
did commentary.
Sergeant Slaughter got the powder in the back pocket, throwing it in someone's eyes.
My dad, I don't think you're Facebook friends with my dad, but my dad posted on Facebook the final round we recorded on video, and my dad and I did commentary.
Ah.
I need to send it to Zoe or something and be like, Zoe, what do you think of my commentary here in the cornhole finals? Because my dad was getting a kick out of it because I was just playing it straight, just treating it like it was a real sporting event. But obviously, it's just a goofy cornhole tournament, so it was killing him.
Yes. You need an on-field reporter, too. Get Barth there. I'm Alex Barth, 90,000 Sports Hub.
We just cut to Barth. Yeah. We cut to Barth in a completely different location and pretend he's there.
I can't find the contestants in this contest.
Yeah, let's go to Barth down on the field. And it's just him in his bedroom.
He's just like, he's looking out. He's like, no, this can't be right. He's outside of Dairy Queen, like in denim. He's like, this can't be it. I'm Alex Barth, 90,000 Sports Hub.
Yeah, and one of them kept missing.
Back to you, Gorilla.
One of the and the aforementioned Jane, who's one of the best players, kept missing. And then all of a sudden, one round, she got three on the board.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a great strategy here. She knows she can't get it in the hole right now, so she's adjusting. She's trying to get it on the board. Outstanding strategy, Steve. And it's just, I think I got in their heads a little bit.
So about all of this, I went to high school with someone who plays professional cornhole now. I'm not even kidding.
Really? See, I like professional cornhole to me is it's basically who misses the hole the least.
Right.
I feel like if you're that good, you're a world class, you're the best in the world, you just don't miss. You know
right.
what I mean?
You're just automatic.
It's a professional, it's like if the NBA was all free throws. It's who's going to shoot 99% and who's going to shoot 100%.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. No, I'd agree with that. I don't know. I think this league is a bit crooked here. I'm not going to lie.
He's a damn flim-flammer, I tell you.
We're going to have to get Barth on the scene here, some investigative journalism. He's got to wear a big bow tie like Ken Rosenthal, too. That's part of the thing.
Stand on a soapbox. Stand on a crate. Yeah, it's a grift. That's a word that's come back it's the 20s.
It's a good
all
one.
All these political commentaries. Your grift is up, sir.
Yeah, I like...
we've been hoodwinked, I tell you. We've been flim-flammed.
I was going to say, I like that one. I also like... I like rapscallion. I don't know why. That's always been a fun word to me.
I don't even... Yeah, I always wonder what the origins of these terms are.
Right. I also like calling someone Houdini for some reason. I don't know why. It just seems very whimsical to call somebody Houdini.
Well, I know a term. I know Houdini is used to describe something that I probably can't say on the podcast.
Oh, you probably can't. I don't know. What can we say on this?
We can't. Not much.
Yeah.
So I guess we should take a break now. I don't know. That was pretty much my break. You know, I had golf, cornhole. Other than that, just kind of relaxed.
Yeah.
Now I'm back, but a lot of sports stuff happened while I was out, especially with the hockey team.
I know. How do we want to start?
Well, you know what? Let's take a break. We're going to take a breather, and then we'll get to the hockey stuff. We're back. Ty. So much hockey stuff went down while I was out.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. The Bruins, they had their dev camp. The NHL draft happened right before I left. Yeah, that was last week, right?
Yes. Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, and then free agency started. A lot of big moves around the NHL. Bruins made a couple moves. So let's start with just the regular moves. So the Bruins' biggest move... if I'm not mistaken, was they traded Eric Halla for Pavel Zaka. There wasn't a bigger move than that, I'm assuming, right?
That was it.
Okay. I'm just making sure that I didn't. There was nothing I missed because they're very quite possible. I was completely off the grid from sports for a good 10 days there. Mm-hmm. But the Bruins traded Eric Halla for Pavel Zaka. I love the trade because they got 6 years younger with Zaka. More upside. He was a top 10 pick in the dreaded 2015 NHL draft. You know, if he turns out to be something better than he's been before, you know, maybe the draft club doesn't look so bad anymore now that they have that guy in the fold. That's a very optimistic way of looking at it. But Zaka, a couple years ago, he scored 17 goals in 50 games. So, I mean, he was on a 60-point pace that year. You know, if he's a 60-point guy... He's going to be well worth whatever they pay him. I guess he's doing arbitration, so assuming they don't hammer out a long-term deal, he's going to make $3.5-4 million. So, you know, he makes more sense as the number two center if you had to put him there than Eric Halla would. Mm-hmm. And I guess he's never been that much of a playmaker, so he makes more sense maybe as a wing. So he'll probably play some left wing, especially while Brad Marchand's out. But, you know, he's big, obviously. I had to change my underwear when I saw how big he is. He's got a good shot. He's played on special teams, and I mean he's been working out in Boston, so he's familiar with the area.
He lives here.
He basically lives here. Probably just wants to be here, you know.
Yeah.
He's gonna have other Czech teammates like David Pastrnak. Maybe David Krejci comes back, so we'll have that comfortability.
Pastrnak was his line mate on the national team.
Oh, there you go.
So you got that.
Yeah, so it might be Zaka. The second line might be Hall, Zaka, Pastrnak. Zaka, you know, you could clearly do better than him at a number two center spot, but like this is what they're working with, and you know, I like Derek Holla, but you told me the way you described it is they're selling high on Holla, and that's why I like the deal.
Yeah, you got to do that. I think all smart teams sell high on players if they know that they can't get that same production the following year. I don't know if Holla was going to put up another 18 goals and 50 points or whatever it was, right?
I don't think so.
I doubt it, right? And we saw what happens at the end of the day.
That's sort of where he tops out. That's where he tops out.
And you saw it in the playoffs where the Bruins couldn't rely on him to beat out some other top-line centers. Not that he should necessarily, right? But like when you were going against a team that had Aho, Trocheck, Staal, and even Kotkaniemi, right, was centering like a fourth line basically, like... That was a tough challenge for them. That was a tough challenge for that team, and it put everything on Bergeron. So, Zaka, my understanding, talking to people who've seen him more in Jersey, is he's better at wing than he is at center. So, ultimately, you're going to probably want him on the wing. Now, he can play left and right, though, so that there's value there as well. So, I look at him as an upgrade over Erik Haula. I look at him as an upgrade on the third line with Charlie Coyle. Better than Trent Frederick. He has just more offensive touch than Trent Frederick does. So I like that part of it. I like this trade a lot. And a big thing that with Zaka, and you kind of alluded to it by mentioning his size, interior generation of shots and chances has been really good for him. And that's what they need. And specifically, they need that on power play one.
They had none of that last year, it seems, right?
Well, think about it, right? Like,
or the guy they relied on to do it, like Charlie Coyle, or like they just didn't get enough.
Well, think about it, right? Like at the end of the year, middle of the year, they had that net front guy was Taylor Hall on the first power play unit. And really wasn't his role. Like, just not where you want. Like, he kind of adapted to it over time, but it wasn't a natural fit. I think with a guy like Zaka, it could be a better fit, especially being a left-handed shot. Just gives you more options based on your power play complexion. Assuming Bergeron comes back, you know, in Pastrnak, you got Pastrnak and McAvoy. Like, you just have more options there, I think, with Zaka being that guy. So, I like it from that standpoint. I think that another thing with Zaka is that I find interesting is that he's best friends with Jacob Zboril. They're from the same town in the Czech Republic.
So Zboril was the one I was trying to think of.
So they've been close for a while, but also the Pastrnak connection, I wonder, are they trying to make Pastrnak a little bit happy here? Like, you know, hey, we got a bunch of Czech guys for you.
Butter you up a little bit.
Yeah, please resign. We got one of your national team line mates now. Like, this is great. Like, they could theoretically do an all Czech line if they wanted to between Zaka, Krejci, and Pastrnak, assuming that Krejci comes back.
Do it.
Triple check?
The Prague line.
Yeah. But I think, like, you know, it's interesting that he had an idea that he knew he was going to be traded. So, like, the Devils kind of gave him some inkling that he would be traded. And for it to land in Boston, a place where he lives full-time, you know, like, or in the summer when he's not playing... You know, I wonder if that was the Devils doing him a favor and maybe taking less than what they could have gotten elsewhere. So that's how I look at it.
Really? You think they could have gotten more for Zaka?
I have a hard time believing Erik Haula is the best thing you can get for Pavel Zaka. And I like Erik Haula. I think he does his job and he competes.
Yeah, I liked him.
But, I mean, you mentioned it. 17 goals 2 years ago. 36 points this past year, a career high.
17 goals in 50 games.
Yeah. Like, I feel like you can do a little bit better than a journeyman Erik Haula, but... Either way, if you're the Bruins, that's a win, right? Like,
yeah, look,
like
they get 20 goals. If he scores 20 goals for the first time in his career for the Bruins, big win.
Hits 50 points. Hits 45 points. It's a win.
20 like, and 25.
Like, but he's going to have opportunity here. You mentioned Marchand. Like, so there's that top line left wing spot that's open. There's the second line center instability that we have right now between Krejci and I don't think you trade Erik Haula. Like, let me put it this way. I don't think you trade Erik Haula unless you're really convinced that David Krejci is coming back. That's how I feel about it. So I'm still expecting that to happen, but we look at this roster and we're like, all right, they got this problem here, they got this problem here. And for a guy like Zaka, it's an actually opportunity that to become what he could be. I asked him, do you feel like you're finding your game of late? You know, those these numbers,
he's
trending
still young.
The right
way. He's 25.
He says he still feels like there's not a level to hit. And
yeah,
if he hits it in the place where he's comfortable,
that's great. Lots of guys draft him in the top 10. They take 5-6 years to figure it out. I mean, how amazing would that be if all of a sudden Zaka turns into a 30-30 guy? You know what I mean? 30-30 two-way top six forward.
Think about Ryan Strome.
Obviously that's like the optimistic, you know, high end of it, but it's still possible. I think he hasn't entered his prime yet.
Think about Ryan Strome, right? Who was traded
Strome's a great example
for Ryan Spooner, and he slowly but surely became this impactful center for New York, and he just cashed in with the Ducks.
Right, yeah, Nazem Kadri,
right?
You know, Kadri didn't really score a lot until he went to Colorado. Aaron Ekblad in Florida, that's a defenseman, but like, you know, it takes time sometimes. Guys don't come right in and produce all the time.
Yeah.
You know, someone like a Connor McDavid or whatever, that's just rare. So, yeah, I think it's a worthy gamble that the Bruins made with the Zaka trade. Obviously, it doesn't change the fact that, like, they might still be lacking in the high-end talent. They're lacking in depth. They're lacking in organizational depth. You know, we'll see with the prospects from the last couple of years. And, like, obviously, none of that changes. I'm not saying that Zaka's going to put him over the top for a cup or anything, but this move in and of itself, I think, is a good move.
Yeah, well, when your prospect pool sucks, if you can pick up a younger player, and I consider 25 younger, right? I mean, he has experience, but he's still young. You got to make these kind of trades, right? You mentioned it off the jump. You flip a 31-year-old for a 25-year-old who plays center and left wing. You do it every day of the week. You do it every day of the week. Like,
he's big. He's bigger.
And the thing that I liked about this from the Bruins' point of view is that, I mean, Hala, let's be real. He's a journeyman middle six winger or a forward who trends towards the lower side of that. He trends third, fourth line. And the Bruins picked him up after he played third and fourth line in Nashville and bounced around between Carolina, Vegas, Nashville, Florida. Like, he bounced around
guys like that bounce around for a reason.
Right.
Maybe Zaka's a guy that's going to bounce around, but I think it's a worthy risk to take.
Yeah, no, this is what smart teams need to do when they're backed into a corner. And the Bruins, I have more believability. Maybe that's not the right way to say it, but like, them making this move makes me intrigued about next season versus running it back with Eric Halla, because I want to see this kid at center. I want to see him at wing. I want to know where he's going to play in the power play. Like, he's a guy who brings you some intrigue.
I agree. I agree with all that. I'm gonna shift gears to more hockey talk. I just want to remind you guys that we are going to do the big three later on. We're going to do the big three. Oh, Ty doesn't want me to say it. He was just motioning.
No.
All right. I won't spoil it. You don't want me to spoil it? You don't want me to tease it? You don't want people to want to keep listening? What if they want to know?
Well, they got to listen.
Okay.
Do you want that
to be a weekly thing? Like,
yes.
Every week we just say it at the very end?
Yes.
All right. I guess I'll find out what the big three is. I guess I'm trying to be a radio guy. You're like, no, be a podcast guy.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Sorry to derail the whole show, but here we go.
Not trying to make anyone have their worst day ever.
Oh, yeah. What was that? I think you should leave.
Yeah. Not trying to make anyone have their worst day at their job. How it feels.
Sloppy steaks. So there were a lot of big moves around the league. Bigger moves than the Bruins made. I don't know how concerned you are, but I'm just going to run through. Basically, let's just run through the list. I think we got to start with the Ottawa Senators, who signed Claude Giroux in free agency, and they traded for your boy Alex DeBrincat.
Yes.
So do you think they take a big step forward next year?
Yeah, their defense is still a question mark for me. Obviously, they have Thomas Chabot, but I don't know. You look beyond that, it's a little needs another high-impact player.
We see it here in Boston. Just Charlie McAvoy isn't quite enough.
Right. So I look at – I mean, but that's a – you know, between that and they also got Cam Talbot in net, that's a big move too. But so now you have Anton Forsberg and Cam Talbot. I think that's a solid duo. I don't know if it's top tier, but now it's middle of the pack, I think, versus where they have been in years past. So I like that. I like that team. Like, where they're going. You look at that top six. That is a talented top six when you add Giroux and DeBrincat on top of Brady Tkachuk. Josh Norris as well, who really came to his own. They also have Tim Stutzel, who was top pick a few years ago.
Stutzel. I'm just calling him Stutzel.
But he's another one. So like they got some pieces there now. It's a matter of putting it all together. But definitely better today than they were 2 weeks ago. That's for sure.
Yeah, just don't talk to your Uber driver. That would be my advice to them.
They got rid of Matt Murray too, which is huge because he stinks.
Oh really? Did they make a move in goal?
Well, yeah, they got Cam Talbot.
Cam Talbot. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So they're making moves. I mean, we haven't had to worry about Ottawa for years, but they've been building up this talent. Maybe eventually they're going to be like the Rangers or Carolina, and they're going to start breaking through.
Can I ask like a weird question? Concern. Like, I don't think you'll have the answer to this, but it's more rhetorical, I guess, than anything else.
You stupid. I don't think you know.
No, but like, I don't know how up to you are with Ottawa Senators business front office.
Thing. Not at all.
So like, did they just need the owner to die? Like, I know that sounds like super dark and morbid.
Is that
but,
Eugene
like,
Melnyk?
But he died, and all of a sudden now they're spending money. Like what is that? Like, is it just his kids like really want to win?
Didn't that happen in Chicago? Like the guy they had before,
Rocky Wirtz.
He literally came out and said like, oh, don't be expecting to win any Stanley Cups. Those are too expensive.
They weren't even on.
Then
TV.
He's gone, and then all of a sudden they start drafting better. They start spending, and they win 3 cups in 5 years.
Yeah, like I mean this with no disrespect to Eugene Melnyk. It's just weird that. They were a budget team for so long.
Disrespected owner, I don't care.
But then everyone's yelling
at
me.
Is he sick or something? I don't know.
But yeah, I think he had like cancer or something. But
okay, well, I'm not gonna joke about that. But
no, yeah. No. But when he passed away, all of a sudden now they're like making these moves that they wouldn't make for years, and it's just like I find it interesting that this happens, and I don't know. His daughters are running the team, and now they really want to win. I love that. That's great for Ottawa because Ottawa fans. Kind of been through it, right? Where like they have watched. We talk about the Red Sox, right? Like the Ottawa fans have watched Mark Stone, Erik Karlsson, Craig Anderson. Like they watched all these guys just leave, and they're like, "What the hell, man? Like this kind of sucks." And that Ottawa team that never won it, dude.
Oh, the Alfredson, Hossa.
Alfredson,
Danny Heatley,
Jason Spezza,
Patrick Laulim in goal.
They had Hasek in net too for a little while. Chara, Redden, like they had all
Chara
these guys.
Redden.
Like
that was
so
a good team. Yeah, that was
it's nice
team
to see them on the cusp of being relevant again.
The NHL is better when the Canadian teams are good. I mean,
yes.
Let's be honest. You gotta have the Canadian teams in the mix,
right? Right.
You know, can't be freaking Florida and San Jose and, you know, all those teams that top the league every year. That's not good.
It's not good for business. Despite what the NHL believes, it's not good for business.
It's good to have the capital of Canada actually have a good team.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, some upgrades there. They're going to be a threat. I don't know if they're a top flight threat, but they will be a threat. They're going to be annoying like how they were 3 years ago.
Well, yeah, that's my concern because like they just weren't around for a few years, and now they might be going right up the Bruins' asses.
Well, the Bruins had won like 18 of 20 games against them over the last like 4 years.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to be a little tougher now. They got better. You could argue they have a better top six forward group now.
Right. So you're not; those aren't gimmies anymore. So that
right.
part of it is,
exactly.
is frustrating.
All right. Now next is Carolina. They traded for Brent Burns and Max Pacioretty,
and gave up almost nothing to make these trades happen. Crazy.
They traded out Tony DeAngelo to the Flyers, which. That ought to tell you, like, he was actually, like, playing well and producing. That ought to tell you how much of an a-hole that guy is to ship him out after 1 year.
That's such a...
Or was it 2 years? Like, they just shipped him out pretty quickly.
That is such a bitch move by the Hurricanes that you want this guy and all his problems when he's $1 million, but then you got to pay him, and you're like, actually, we don't want to pay him. Like, just admit that you're a cheap team, what you want
to
do.
Is he a restricted free agent or something? How were they able to trade him?
Yeah, they traded his
or like
rights.
He's got 1 year
yeah,
left.
They traded his rights to. No, he was a. He needed a new contract. He wasn't going to be a bargain anymore. Now they didn't want to pay him. Now his problems weren't worth it. Okay.
Right. No.
All right.
I mean, all these teams do that. They all say one thing publicly when you know it's really mostly about the money.
Oh, but
the
they
time.
Tried. They tried this redemption arc with him.
But don't you
so
think? It's,
hard.
But don't you think like they just decided he's not worth the trouble?
Yeah, he's not worth the trouble because he's not. They have to pay him real money now instead of paying him.
That's what I'm. That's what I mean. Like, it's not worth paying this a-hole $9 million.
Right, right. But it's just so funny that they tried so hard for this redemption arc of, oh, he's been a great teammate. He's been this. He's been that. Lasted 1 year. You want to pay him $5 million?
No,
okay.
You can't just accept whatever the team says.
No, I know.
You know?
I know. But I just
I'm sure maybe he was trying because I know that I know Tony D'Angelo knows that he's probably going to try a little better to be a little better.
I dislike that franchise
to get that contract. You know what I mean?
I dislike
Philly
that
is
franchise
perfect landing
immensely.
Spot for him.
I dislike the Hurricanes immensely.
Why?
I do not respect
that
franchise.
Oh, because that tweet. It's that tweet.
No, it's that, but it's also like they're like the way they run things. They tell you one thing and then they do another. Like I don't know. I just
but
don't,
aren't they?
They try to be these good guys, but they're always trying to sign like pieces of crap. Like they're always in the mix for if there's a piece of garbage who can be had for nickels, they want them. Like maybe, that's how it is.
Was it Mike Milbury who called them a bunch of jerks?
It was Don Cherry.
Don Cherry. Maybe, yeah. Maybe Don Cherry was on to something. So, I hate to say it.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, no, it's great.
Shout out to Sarah Civi in front of the program.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like, she's great. I dislike that. I just dislike that organization and begins at the top of their owner who redacted. No, but they got better. They didn't give up anything, which is it's amazing that these
all
teams
right,
can always do this.
I'll bleep that all out.
No, you don't have to.
But don't they have to pay?
I was going to say something about the owner, but I'm not going
to. Don't they have to pay Brent Burns and Max Pacioretty? Aren't they making money?
Yeah, they are, but they gave up nothing to get them, which is like,
okay.
which is.
It was a salary dump from the former, from the Golden Knights.
Jesus, would you want to play for the Vegas Golden Knights with the way they've had to give players away because their cap is so poorly managed?
I know, poor Bruce. He's like, oh geez. What am I working with now?
Last 3 years, they've had to give away Marc-Andre Fleury. They've had to give away Max Pacioretty. They've had to give away, who did they give away? Dadonov. Like they are just not... They need a capologist in the worst way.
It's like in the last couple of years they brought in someone in the front office who like it was so stupid he didn't even know how to explain it to the GM. He's like, no, you have a cap. You can only spend so much money. I don't even know how to say this.
It's like when you go hog wild in NHL and you sign a bunch of players and like, oh, I have $11 in cap space. This is not good. It's like you accidentally signed all these amazing players, and they're like, ooh, I have to pay them.
That just reminds me, like, at my cousin's house where we had the family party, it's like he was showing me this, like, this landscaping job that was all messed up because they had, like, the wrong measurements. Like, they measured wrong when they cut the parts. And he was like, the guy was so stupid, I didn't even know how to explain it to him because it's like you're talking to a carpenter, and it's like, no, you understand you have measurements.
Yes.
You have to make... the correct measurements. It's like, somebody tell the Golden Knights that you don't have unlimited money just because you have a cap, and it doesn't mean it's monopoly money.
Right. And I think the big thing with Carolina here, though, that would kind of concern me is they let Vinny Trocheck walk and they didn't bring anyone in to replace him. They have Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I don't think he's that good personally.
They signed him long term, didn't they?
Yeah, I don't see him moving up to that second line center spot. No problem. Vinny Trocheck was the way he competes, the way he would make things happen. Like I think that's going to be a big loss for them.
Trocheck's an established top six forward.
Right, yeah. Right. So who they're going to have to move somebody up, and there's a debate going on right now in Carolina. Like they'd like to bring back Nino Niederreiter. He's still a free agent. But they also have Marty Nechas, who projects as a second line center of the future, right? But there's been a little bit of a talk here now, reading some Carolina people that you have to basically pick between Niederreiter and Nechas because one is a future piece and the other one's a win now piece. Niederreiter being the win now piece, you probably can't have both based on your cap in the way that's projected. So we'll have to see there. But if it's Kotkaniemi as their second line center, I don't think that team is as good as they were a year ago.
Could the Bruins get Nino Niederreiter? Is that possible?
With what cap space, though? The Bruins
what I'm asking.
Yeah, no. The Bruins' moves are going to be Bergeron and Krejci.
Like, he's not going to be crazy expensive, but he's going to make like $6 million or something, right?
No, he'll probably be close. I would say 4.5 to 5. It all depends on the term. Like, he's not like in Mike Hoffman territory where he's going to get like a PTO and sign for $1 million or $4 million, 1 year.
Right, he's
going to
get
like,
something.
No, he's going to get something. It's just a matter of what. It's kind of weird that he's in a holding pattern with all the money that's been thrown around.
Yeah, but he strikes me as more of a second wave. You know, he's not a day one free agent.
Well, I think the reason for that is I think he wants to be in Carolina. I think he wants to stay there.
Oh, okay.
Based on what I've heard, because I originally pegged him as a guy who I thought the Bruins should target. If they have cap space, because I like what he does.
And the Hurricanes are looking at him like Rick Harrison from Pawn Stars. Best I can do is $20.
Basically, yeah. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, no, that's better. If you can add Burns and Pacioretty without subtracting from your NHL roster, It is an upgrade. I just wonder about that second spot.
That's interesting because, yeah, they lost Trocheck, but they added Burns and they lost Trocheck and D'Angelo and added Burns and Pacioretty. So, I don't know. Did they get better?
It all depends on what you believe Brent Burns can do. Like, he's 37.
Right. He's not like, the same guy.
Yeah. Is he still 50 points, Brent Burns? Because that's what Tony D'Angelo was. Tony D'Angelo is a piece of garbage, but he put up good numbers.
Yeah.
Like, so that's how I look at it. So I'm curious there. Burns in San Jose this past year was not a pleasant viewing experience, in my opinion. I'd watch him like, oh my God, this guy is cooked. This is not good. So I'm curious, though, but Pacioretty will thrive under Brind'Amour. That is a good addition for Brind'Amour's system. I think that's a guy who you'll see some good numbers out of this year.
All right, I'll make sure to draft him in fantasy. Okay, so speaking of Trocheck, he signed with the Rangers. So, I mean, that's a good move. They didn't lose anybody, right, the Rangers?
Strome. They flipped.
Swapped Strome for Trocheck?
Yeah.
That's probably an upgrade, honestly.
Well, Trocheck, if you remember, he played for Gerard Gallant in Florida. So there's a little bit of familiarity there.
Oh, there we go.
So I think it's a good move for the Rangers. Ultimately, the Rangers, I look at them and I look at sort of like that cap crunch is a coming for that team, right? And so what do they do now to maximize that? It's funny, the Rangers want to go into the year. The Rangers are aware of their window. I was reading Larry Brooks. Larry Brooks was saying how the Rangers want to enter the season with cap space. So at the deadline, they can make a big addition without subtracting from their roster. Like, they want to have deadline cap space. So we'll have to see if they can just basically tread water until the deadline and then swing for the fences and bring in a superstar. But that cap crunch is coming, and they know it.
You mentioned cap crunch. I noted down a couple of moves that are really more related to the team that lost the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be Andre Palat signed with the Devils. So the Tampa loses Palat.
Big loss.
And Colorado lost Andre Burakovsky to the Seattle Kraken. Great signing for the Kraken, I think. Kraken could be trending upward.
We're still waiting on Kadri, too.
Yeah, Kadri hasn't signed yet.
Lose Kemper. They lost Kemper, too. I was kind of right. Ty was kind of right.
The hashtag Ty, this is why I brought it up. Like, yeah. This is what you were saying. Like, they're going to have to start peeling guys off.
Yep.
They're going to not be able to afford certain guys. So now, the two best teams in the league, if you want to call them that.
I would.
A little less deep.
Yeah, Palat's a big loss, man. So if you go back and
he was one of those guys, sorry, but he was like a cornerstone rock. Never had to worry about Andre Palat.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and I think if you look at Tampa's last three postseasons, I think if you look at the on-ice goal differential, I think Palat's was something insane. It was like plus 60. Like it was something ridiculous like that.
Winning player. That's how I always like
Big
Palat.
Goals. Knew how to play this time of year, right? Yeah. And so that's a big loss for them, but knowing the Lightning, they're going to have some guy who's going to be signed out of Saginaw who's going to come in and do the exact same thing. You're like, where the hell did this guy come from? Like, so
of course, probably.
So I'm curious how they handle that. But yeah, no, like you're seeing the Lightning strip away parts. They traded McDonough to Nashville.
Did that happen last week? That was the one I
ago.
Missed.
Yeah, leading up to the draft, they traded
McDonough. No more McDonough.
No more McDonough. They traded Jan Ruda. They let Jan Ruda walk. He's now in Pittsburgh. Now, they committed big dollars to Sergachev. They gave Sergachev the Seth Jones contract. That's crazy. I don't know if he's that good.
That's like the Pavel Zaka of defense.
Yeah.
he hasn't really taken that step.
Right. And they also signed Eric Cernak to a big contract and Anthony Cirelli to a big contract as well. So they were doing more internal housekeeping, but they lost Palat as a result.
They better hit on more second and third round picks. That's what I would say about Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
One more move before we move on, Ty. Johnny Hockey to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
This is a wild one, right?
This is crazy. A weird one.
Left $17 million on the table to go from Calgary to Columbus.
Oh, he took less money.
Yeah, because
I assumed he just went where the most money was.
No, because Calgary's final. Because keep in mind too, Calgary could offer the extra year. So
all right.
So if you factor in the cap hit, the yearly AAV, and the extra year, he left $17 million on the table to leave. To I thought Philly. I was like, oh, he's going home. He's because he said to the Flames, "I'm leaving because I want to." It's a personal decision to be. It's a family decision. I was like, oh, Philly. He's going to Philly. He didn't go to Philly. He went like 6 hours away from Philly.
Well, that's not too far.
No, it's a plane ride.
It's doable.
But this one was a shocker. This really shocked me. I was very surprised by this. When they entered the mix, I was like, well, that's weird. I was like, all right. But But a great move for Columbus. I think from a PR standpoint, from a team standpoint, he is close with Werenski, I believe. You know, he has connections out there. So that's interesting. So I like that move, but it's, you know, you look at it, if what happened in Philly happened in Boston. Now, I don't know if you read this. Emily Kaplan wrote that Gaudreau had told people that he wanted to be in Philly, that he was going to sign with the Flyers. Chuck Fletcher, the GM of the Flyers, ultimately didn't make that move because he would have had to trade pieces off his roster. Now, let's go back to what Philly did. Philly traded for Tony DeAngelo and signed him to a $5 million contract. They went out and they signed Nick DeLaurier, the enforcer, formerly of Anaheim, then went to Minnesota, now in Philly, for $1.5 million. They brought in Justin Braun. They brought him back for $1.5 million.
So that's all that money is like more than what Gaudreau's making.
It's like $8 million and change that you could
like a Hart Trophy candidate.
Oh, my God.
Hart Ross candidate, anyway.
Who wanted to be there? Who wanted to be in his hometown? And you don't make that move.
That's crazy.
If that happened here, Tom Sweeney would not have a job. People would be like, seriously, no, Jack he's got to go.
Like if Jack Eichel was like, no, I'm only playing for the Bruins, and they just refused and then got
they're
a
like,
bunch of points.
We have to trade John Moore and Jake DeBrus. I don't know if we can do that. It's
right,
like,
yeah.
What? No, you make room for that guy. That's crazy to me.
Guys can help our hockey club.
That's crazy to me that Gaudreau's camp was telling people that he wants to be in Philly. He's going to go to the Flyers. And then Chuck Fletcher says, nope, I don't want to trade guys off the roster, and I want to spend $8 million on spare parts. Like, what are you doing?
One of them being Tony DeAngelo.
Right, right. Who, I guess you can save face by him being a Philly. He's a South Jersey kid, so he's a Philly kid. That's basically how that works. But, like,
yeah, I meant to say, Philly's a perfect landing spot for Tony DeAngelo. A lot of lunatics there.
Oh, yeah. Everyone,
a lot of crazy people.
Yeah. I saw a really funny tweet that
a lot of people that puke on each other on purpose.
Somebody was like, everyone who wants to keep the Christopher Columbus statue just found their new favorite player. And I was like, that's so funny.
Oh, look at the Rocky Balboa statue.
That's it's a good landing spot for him. That team is going to be hot doo-doo. But that team is an example of what you don't want the Bruins to be. Where they are just stuck in that perpetual mediocrity where you're like,
yep.
You're like, this team is spending money on the wrong kind of players, and there's no direction, and what the hell are we doing here?
I hate to say it, Ty. It feels like what they've been, the Bruins have been the last few years, what you just described.
No, I think the Bruins are more Pittsburgh Penguins, where you have this strong core, right? Like, you have Crosby and Malkin. Can they shut up out there? I'm trying to do a lot
of talk going on outside our makeshift studio.
So
here.
We have but you have Crosby and Malkin, and then you have Letang, and let's just say you had good goaltending for the most part, right? Like, but you couldn't find the right wingers, you couldn't find the right defensive mix. Like, Philly is a worse Pittsburgh is like a worse version of the Bruins in the sense that at least the Bruins have won a playoff round in the last few years.
Right.
However,
I was
going to
say, what's the difference between the Bruins and the Penguins? The Penguins won a couple Stanley Cups.
That's where Pittsburgh has the leg up. They've won two more Stanley Cups than you. But you're basically Atlantic Division Pittsburgh, in my opinion, where you have the strong core, but the supporting cast has always been the issue. It's kind of how it is.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The Penguins, who have the Penguins really drafted? Like, they haven't drafted
It's been a problem.
Particularly
it's been a big
well.
Problem for them.
They've just been leaning on Crosby and Malkin for so many years.
Yeah,
you know?
And then Crosby and Malkin make, you know, Gensel and Rust, like, they make these guys really gifted goal scorers. Kind of similar to, you know, Krejci was propping up all these guys for years, right?
Yeah,
like, that was
Marchand.
The ask. Yeah, so I think the Bruins more Pittsburgh than they are Philly, right? But if you approach Philly to territory, that's scary.
That's I like that. I like those analogies. That was some good hockey talk. All right. Well, the Bruins also had the draft, but we'll get into that next week.
We can get into it.
We got all summer.
There's not a lot. There's not a lot of takeaways from it.
Right,
so we can get into that quickly.
All right. Matthew Poitras. It is pronounced Poitras. I know everyone's going to say Poitras.
Yeah.
Dumb Americans over here. His
real
name
skinny.
Is Poitras.
Met him. Real skinny.
He's slight.
Yeah, yeah, but he
strikes me
he's
as a
fit.
David Krejci type. Not the most explosive, but creative, instinctive, smart player. I was on the air with Alex Barth, our colleague on the air. We were doing the Adam Jones show during the draft. I think it was the first day of the draft, actually. So we did have reactions. Well, it was like two. I think it was.
It was day
after.
Two. It was the day two. The Bruins had
but
picks.
We reacted to all their picks, and it's like you know what I love. My favorite thing about these picks, Ty, Canadians.
Yeah.
This team needed more Canadians. I'm sorry. Too many Americans. Not let alone too many guys from Massachusetts. Too many Americans.
Too many Americans.
Got enough Americans.
Yes.
Let's get some damn Canadians on this team. And so I'm glad they got, you know, big, smart Canadians. That's my general takeaway on this draft class. So I kind of like it.
Yeah, these kids are all scrappy too, man. Like I like watching Dev Camp, seeing.
That's what I like about Canadians.
Yeah, like these kids, like, they're not soft. They got motors. Yeah, so I'm excited.
They might not be like, you know, they might not be physical, but they're not soft. That would be my thing.
Yeah, no, he's a player to watch. I think Brett Harrison is a player to watch too. I really like Brett Harrison's game.
Well, he was drafted last
third
year,
round right? pick 2021. But watching him,
he looked good at Dev Camp.
Yeah, look bigger, stronger.
Okay,
he's 6'3", so he projects, you know, around that.
But he's hot and bothered over here, Ty.
But he had, you know, he had a bit of a trying year in the OHL. I believe his team went through a coaching change, so that was a bit of an issue for him. But he's beginning to round into his frame. He added 10 pounds of weight to his body, because he was another kid who last year I saw him, I was like, this kid's good, but he's real thin. He's got to add some weight. So you're seeing these kids begin to add weight to their. They're immersing themselves in the pro program in terms of training, diet, all that crap. So I like it. But what you're seeing with the Bruins, I think, particularly with this draft class, is big defensemen and smaller forwards who are fast, scrappy, get inside ice. Those are the two biggest takeaways I have, that they are drafting defensemen with long reaches and forwards who can get under your skin. This is the Tampa Bay model. This is the Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, Anthony Cirelli, and then behind them we got Cernak and we got Hedman. We got these guys with long reaches. I'm not saying these guys are going to be those players. If they are, that's amazing. But it's the blueprint of what you're looking for organization.
Right. Well, yeah, like Kucherov and Braden Point obviously was a third round pick and Kucherov was a second round pick. So it's not like going into the draft, they knew that those guys were going to be offensive studs, but they had those little qualities that you say you like, and if they put it all together, they could be really good. And so I hope that Matthew Poitras can be, you know, a good playmaking center. I saw some of the highlights. Like the kid sees the ice like a real pro. So I think he's going to stick around at least. He's going to play.
I like the OHL too. I like the OHL for these kids because I feel like I think the OHL represents the game that's closest to the NHL today in terms of where it's going with active D
forwards.
That's another
thing. That was another thing I was saying. OHL. Give me Canadians from the OHL. I love it.
The WHL has gotten pretty good, too, in this regard. The Q is the one I'm always like, I don't know about that league.
The Q.
It's not really for me.
Shorten your acronym.
But the kid they got from the Q, Frederick Brunette, I like him a lot. He can make plays from the back end. Real smart, sees the ice very well for a defenseman.
But that wasn't
opinion.
The kid that they said can't skate backwards, right? That was one of their later picks.
Who was that?
Bart and I were cracking up. Was
Jackson Edward?
Yeah, I think that was it.
You're going to love Jackson Edward.
We went through his strengths and weaknesses. I was like, okay, so he can skate forward. That's his biggest asset.
Jackson Edward is your kind of player, Matt.
Why? Because he sucks?
He's a mean MF-er. He was putting dudes on their asses. He's physical, man. He is...
Yeah, don't misrepresent me. I'm not a big bad Bruins. Like everybody's got to be a bruising physical guy.
No, you want all the players.
I want guys that are. I like scrappers. I want scrappy. I want not soft.
Nope.
That's all I want.
You want everyone drinking eggs for breakfast. That's what you want them doing.
Well, that I won't mind. I'll make them the eggs if they means they're going to bring them to the Stanley Cup.
Do you know who Jackson Edwards coaches in the OHL?
Jack Edwards.
That'd be sick. Concuss that. No, it's Dale Hunter.
Oh, there we go.
So Dale Hunter runs the London Knights program. He's the head coach there, too.
So the Bruins will be great at assaulting players several seconds after they score a goal.
Yes, precisely. But they got some late-round steals here, man. If you go back a year, these past couple of years, Riley Duran, who's playing in Providence, got invited to Team USA's camp at the World Juniors. Ty Gallagher, seventh-round pick last year, plays at BU, invited to Team USA's camp. Like, the drafting thing may be turning around for them a little bit here.
Okay.
These are very key years.
Well, that's not just your opinion. Isn't there buzz around the league where they, like, because people tend to give their honest opinions on other teams' draft. They don't always say, great pick, great that. Like, they've said before, like, I don't know what the Bruins are doing here, but now people are sort of saying, like, that they're making better decisions.
Yeah, another guy is Oscar Jelvik, who's going to be playing at BC this year, a guy who was playing Swedish Junior, who you probably didn't see a lot of, right, just because of where he was playing. But watching him at camp, I was like, they might have something here, too. So they are changing their philosophy. I've said this before. It's more talent now than it is grit, character, personality. Like, they're like, no, no, we need good hockey players. We'll teach them how to do this and that, but we need good hockey
players.
That's
what I mean. Like, that feels like they got real hockey players. That's what I like about Patra, especially. Like, it just seems like he's like a real player. He's not just like, well, you know, he can skate. He's got some jam, you know.
Yeah, I really wish that we got a look at Mason Lowry this week, because this man is looking like a redwood tree. Every time I see him, he's getting bigger. I'm like, this guy.
He wasn't at dev camp?
He was, but he wasn't on the ice. He's recovering from an off-season knee surgery, so they had.
Oh, that's good.
So, but dude, he's 6'5", and he looks every inch of it. And he's a left shot D.
Don't get me too excited now.
But think about this, right? Like you could realistically be looking at a defense. Let's just say 2 years, right? Let's just be conservative here. Let's say 2 years. You could be looking at a defense that has 6'4" Hampus Lindholm, 6'2", but plays like a 6'5" Charlie McAvoy. 6'5" Brandon Carlo and 6'5" Mason Lowry. Like,
it's about effing time.
And two of those guys.
I'd say for 5 years they got to get bigger on the back end.
I would say three of those guys can really move the puck. The way Mason Lowry can move the puck, watching him at Ohio State a little bit, like, this kid moves like, you know, like a Torrey Krug type, despite being 6'5".
That's what I like. Yeah, you move the puck a little bit, but if you have to get back, hopefully you're a redwood tree. So that's what I like to hear about Mason Lowry.
Yeah.
All right, so that's good. That was a good list of players that Felger and Mazel make fun of us for bringing up on the podcast.
But I hate that chart. I hate that ranking, by the way.
Yeah, Felger and Mazel, today's Wednesday, so if you were listening to Felger and Mazel, they were going through... Some dude made like the prospect rankings.
That's the thing.
And the Bruins dropped from 30th to 30th. So obviously, Felger and Mazel are going to sink their hooks into that thing.
It's just one.
It's not even that I disagree. I'm not even saying, like, actually, they have a good farm system. I'm not saying that. But it's
no, we're not going that far.
But whatever, we're talking about one guy's opinion, you know?
Yeah.
And if this same guy said, hey, the Bruins jumped into the top 10, they'd probably crap all over him. Say he's a homer idiot. So,
I mean, whatever. Like, the whole thing is, like, he's ranking the goaltending. Like, the whole thing that killed me about it was the goaltending was ranked 30th. So Jeremy Swayman is now old? Is that what we're going to say here?
Weren't they in contention for the Jennings Trophy?
Yeah, well, he's saying prospects. Okay. All right, so let's...
Oh, this is all just prospects.
But let's move beyond the prospects then. Okay. The Bruins have two goalies that they've drafted, Philip Svedback and Reed Dick. Those are two goalies that, like, not really a great sample size for either player.
I
so how are we going to...
love Reed Dick. There's going to be a lot of Dick talk next week on the podcast.
Dick picks.
A lot of dick pics.
Yeah. If you're going to be a dick.
Found a lot of dick pics on Getty Images.
Yes. Jesus.
We're talking about Reed Dick, Bruins goaltender.
I know. So.
Dick.
The thing with him is I was asking some people, because I don't watch the WHL. I barely watch, you know, the AHL. And people were saying that you can see there's some talent there. It's just he has lapses where you're like, what the hell was that? He's a sixth-round pick. If he does anything, that's great. But at the end of the day, no one knows. That's the other thing, too. These rankings, I don't care because nobody knows if these kids are going to be any good. And that's why I'm laughing, because Felger and Mazel spent Tuesday talking about baseball prospects, being like, you trade these guys because you don't know if they're good. And now the next day, a ranking comes out. The Bruins rank 32nd. And
guy knows. This guy knows everyone who's going to be good.
What are we doing here?
You don't understand. This guy has all the answers.
And the chart that this guy uses is not something I necessarily agree with, because it's based on, like, if a player is going to be a franchise player. Listen, if you're picking in, like, the end of the first round or late second round, mid-third round, you're not going to find a lot of those guys just by design. But... okay, they're not going to be superstars. Can they play in the NHL? That's what I care about. I don't care if they're going to be on the cover of NHL, EA Sports, you know, NHL 2027. I don't care
about
that.
And it's not fair to be like, here's the elite level prospects in the system. Here's where they rank. Because it's like, not everybody can get Connor. Not everybody gets the first pick and gets Connor McDavid.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, who even cares about ranking farm systems?
Yeah.
Makes no sense. The
world's going to explode. Who cares?
We don't know how good or bad these guys are going to be. You know, maybe the Bruins all of a sudden take a leap. It seems like they've gotten better the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think generally, like, my short-term outlook for the Bruins still isn't good. I think they're still, like, you know, middle of the pack. They're still going to be fighting for one of those last Eastern Conference playoff spots. So, I mean, if you're expecting them to make a deep playoff run the next couple of years, I don't feel good about that at all, but... I don't know. It just seems like they've sort of turned around the drafting and developing things. Things like that's gotten a little better. So maybe in a few years, when they're started sort of turning the team over to a whole new core and like the current core guys like Bergeron are retired and all that, maybe they'll be in much better shape. So, I mean, I don't know. I know I'm an optimist when it comes to the Hawkeye. I want that to happen, but you know, I don't think it's going to happen for them in the next year or two.
No, you need Jeremy Swayman to become Tuukka Rask. Like, you need him to take that jump.
Yeah, he's got to be a Vezina guy next year.
Right.
He's got to be a game changer. He's got to be a top 4-5 player on the team.
Yeah. If that happens, now we're talking about an elevated status. If that doesn't happen, they're a wild card team who needs some breaks to go their way. I mean,
yeah, no, I still think they're in the mix for the playoffs, and they probably will make the playoffs because they just have
rebuilding.
Too much.
You're just not.
No, they're not rebuilding.
They've never rebuilt. You know, they've never rebuilt under Jacobs. They've never done it.
Right.
They weren't trying to rebuild.
They were trying to be good. They hired Dave Lewis.
Yeah, in 06, 07, when they were, quote, rebuilding, they signed Charon Savard.
I was going to call Dave Lewis something that would have been very unfair.
Yes. Yeah, no. Can't do it. We all know who he looks like. You can't say it. As funny as it is, you can't say it.
But the hairdo, all right.
Yeah.
Well, folks, we've given you an hour here, and we're still going to do the big three. And I ain't going to tell you what it is. I'm going to tell you what it is after the break. Just one quick ad here. We'll be right back. We're back. Ty, time for the big three. Can I tell the people what the damn big three is?
Yeah. All right. Now you can.
I might have to put a drum roll or something like that in here. Or maybe like the ESPN draft pick noise. The dun 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 dun. For this week's big three, we select the big three actors/actresses who died too young. Actors and actresses we lost too soon. I know that might seem a little morbid to our faithful listeners, but to me it's more of a celebration of life. We're going to celebrate careers of people that we loved and we wish we had a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was your idea, Ty, so you shall go first in this week's big three.
Yeah, so the idea came to me because I was having an annoying day. My brain was bothering me. I was not feeling well. So I wanted to put on a comfort movie. That comfort movie, Uncle Buck. My God, I love John Candy, and I wish we got him for more than 43 years. That's it.
That's way too young for anyone to die, let alone a comic genius like him.
John Candy made any scene he was in hilarious. He was also good at pulling at your heartstrings, which is a rare quality, I feel like, for a lot of comedy actors. So I Planes, Trains, Automobiles, love that movie.
Classic.
Even Home Alone, like, he's in it for like 15 minutes, but it's like 15 of the funniest minutes of the entire movie, in my opinion. It's unbelievable how good that movie is. So I am going with John Candy, first overall.
I love it. Oh, Unbreakable. That's my favorite part of Uncle Buck. It's like, why are you hitting that on the table? There's no need for it.
The scene when he's talking to his girlfriend on the phone, he's like, oh,
it goes on for like a full two minutes.
Unbelievable, yeah.
That's just, you picture them filming and it's like, all right, just do this. He just improvises. He was great at that.
Fantastic.
He was great at improvising, like making it seem like he was you know, it was a planned thing, but it was improvised. Yeah, I love John Candy. In a similar vein, my first pick is Chris Farley.
Mm.
He was the guy who was like, pretty much everyone agreed he was the funniest person on SNL back when he was on SNL. It's like, nobody, I've never heard one person say, well, I think one of my friends tried for a good second to argue that Chris Farley wasn't funny, and we just completely dismissed it. We were just like, I'm not even going to dignify you right now as a human.
No,
that
you
response.
Can't.
Chris Farley, like, he's just a guy who's just, he commanded you. You know, he took over. He was only 33 years old when he died. You know, it's insane. Like, he was on his way. He would have been Shrek. So the whole Shrek franchise changed because they had to go from Chris Farley to Mike Myers.
Have you ever seen the clips of him as Shrek?
That.
Like, listen to the audio?
I
it's wild.
We might have talked about it on the pod before, but yeah. Yeah, no, I love that old footage of him as Shrek. It was cool to hear it because I didn't even hear it until, like, you know, a few years ago, so it was weird to hear it like 25 years after he died. But yeah, no, Chris Farley was a comic genius. He was just one of those guys where it's like, I wish he took better care of himself. You know, everybody obviously misses him. Like, Adam Sandler did a whole tribute song to him in his Netflix special that came out just like 2 years ago. So that shows like the effect that he still has. And like, there have been other funny people on SNL, like Will Ferrell, Kristen Wiig, whatever. Nobody touches Chris Farley, as far as I'm concerned. And I think he was on his way to being like a legit good actor. Like, I think he was a pretty good actor. And I think the fact that he was like this fat guy who did pratfalls and all that silliness sort of masked the fact that he could legit act. So I think that he had a lot left to give us, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think his last movie, Almost Heroes, got a really bad rap with the critics because he had just died. And so I think their expectations were too high for his last movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so they looked at it as like, oh, I can't believe they did Chris Farley like that. But to me, that movie's hilarious. My friends and I loved that movie. Like, my closest friends and I, we quote that movie all the time like it's Ghostbusters or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, Chris Farley is still one of my favorite comic actors for sure. If you ask my favorite comic, I probably would put Chris Farley number one. So, yeah, I'm done rambling about Chris Farley, but yeah, it's way too sad that we lost him in the freaking late 90s. Should have stuck around a little longer. You know, I wish he did anyway.
Right, right. No, that was a good pick. That was on my list. Loved everything he did. Made my parents take me to see Beverly Hills Ninja in theaters. Sally Jones! Huge fan.
That was the only dud of his career, I think.
It really was.
Beverly Hills Ninja.
It really was. But even that one still has its moments where you laugh just because it's Chris Farley. Moving on.
Your pick.
I feel like I'm swiping this off your list.
Uh-oh.
Heath Ledger.
He was on my list.
He was on your list.
Not too devastated by that one, but he was on my list.
The Dark Knight Rises would have been a way better movie if it was Joker and Bane. Because without Joker, that franchise went, just fell off. Because you had Tom Hardy coming there for 3 hours. Way too long of a movie, by the way.
It's too bad that young man wasn't asleep.
Yeah, Connor Ryan and I kept calling Pavel Zaka, Dr. Pavel! And it was the stupidest thing, but we were just dying laughing. But yeah, I would say that, like, that franchise kind of died when he died. That franchise died when he died because it deserved a way better ending than what we got. I don't think Dark Knight Rises is a good finale.
They would have brought the Joker back.
Yes,
he was
going to be back.
Right?
He was going to be the villain, and that threw their entire plan in the blender. That's why they killed off Harvey Dent. Because, like, oh, we got Joker for the third one, so we're not going to keep.
It's sort of like Carrie Fisher died, and that sort of screwed up the end of that Star Wars trilogy.
Yes.
With Princess Leia.
Yes. Yes.
General Leia, whatever her name was. Yeah, no, that's it's funny. I remember the first time I saw Heath Ledger was in the movie 10 Things I Hate About You. Did you ever see that one?
Yes.
It was your typical like teen movie. Mm-hmm. It's fine. But I figured he was just like one of these heartthrob, you know, he's just going to be in a movie to look good or whatever.
Right.
And wasn't he in that movie, A Knight's Tale? Was that him?
I believe so.
I thought it seemed like he was trending toward just being that sort of whatever.
Was he in The Patriot?
The Patriot, yeah, he's in The Patriot. That's another good one.
Yeah.
I felt like he was just trending toward being one of these like chiseled pretty boy and like just a movie star type, but can't really act. Then all of a sudden, Brokeback Mountain comes out, and I'm like, wait a minute, like he's getting all these rave reviews, and then like the movie is legit great, and him and Jake Gyllenhaal are amazing in it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe my eyes and ears watching him act like that. And then obviously the Joker is like an all time character. And, yeah, we got, he was only 29.
They've been chasing that high of him playing the Joker for, like, three different franchises.
I know, how many
now?
Different Jokers have we had since then? Nobody's going to come close. They tried, Jared Leto was a valiant effort. You know, he's a great actor, but, you know, it's not going to, they should just retire the Joker at this point.
Yeah,
nothing's going to live up to Heath Ledger.
Enough, yes.
Yeah, he was only 29. He probably had a lot more, you know, good performances in him for us. He probably was going to win another Oscar. You know, and it's funny, like, they gave him the Oscar after he died for the Joker, but it was truly like deserved. It wasn't
100%.
It wasn't just like, oh, he died, so let's honor him.
Yeah,
you know,
no, that was as legit as they come. Like he was like legit unsettling when he come on screen.
Perfect. No, the scene where it's in the middle of the dinner party and he's holding the knife to Maggie Gyllenhaal's throat. He's going, she can't stand the sight of me. Like that's a classic scene.
First time I saw it, I was like, damn, like this is nuts.
Yeah, the direction by Nolan and the acting and the music, it was all great. I like Heath Ledger. He was on my list. He probably wouldn't have been my top three, though. My actual second pick, and I actually would have been devastated if you took this pick from me, is James Gandolfini.
I knew he was going to be on yours. He was on mine, too, but he's kind of outside of my top three.
That's like if you took Terminator 2 away from me, you'd just know I would just murder you in your sleep.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, that arcade up thing, like those home arcades... They have T2 now.
Oh, my God. With, like, the gun controller?
The two guns, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're going to bankrupt me.
Worth it, though.
James Gandolfini. I forget, like, do you never see The Sopranos?
Or no,
You've seen The Sopranos.
I watched it late, though. I didn't watch it until 2020.
Okay. I have friends that love The Sopranos and are obsessed with it, and I have friends that have never seen it. I have friends that think it sucked because they don't like Italians. So it's you run the gamut when it comes to The Sopranos. But most people who watch through The Sopranos series agree that it's one of the best ever. And, you know, just Tony Soprano is just like, he's like easily a top three character in anything for me. You know, like three I'm just throwing out there as a number.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, I can't even put into words how great his acting was in that. And what devastates me is that, like, he was only 50 years old when he died. So it's obviously sad either way. But I was waiting to see what was going to be his next big thing after Tony Soprano. And that never really came. He had a few movie roles. But I think he struggled. I think he struggled after. I think it's sort of like Heath Ledger, where it's like a playing Tony Soprano kind of drove him crazy, it seemed. You know, and like he was having struggles like that off the set. So I wish he was able to stick around a little longer. He's a great actor. He probably would have won an Oscar someday if he found the right role. You know, took from us way too soon. That's my easy number two pick for me.
Number two, that's a good pick. I love how much he eats deli meat in that show. He just eats deli meat just constantly.
Oh, that's like one of his quirks, the way he like plays with food.
Right.
You know, he did it a certain way that like nobody else could have done.
This is hard for me because I got like three picks that I really want to go with. I can only go with one, however. So I will...
That's what it's all about, baby.
I know. I will go with another actor who I think was trending towards great, great things. Chadwick Boseman...
Good one. Talk about a guy that they could have given an Oscar to after he died, and they gave it to Anthony Hopkins for the third time.
Yes. And, you know, it's funny because I actually think that Black Panther is not, like, people love that movie. I think his character could have been fleshed out more, and I was looking forward to that in, like, the sequel, because it did feel like a lot of the focus in that movie was on Killmonger, who is an awesome character. Michael B. Jordan's character is fantastic.
I think he made that movie, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's why Black Panther was so great. It was because Michael B. Jordan was... I thought Michael B. Jordan should have won an Oscar for that. He was that good.
But Chadwick Boseman's like resume also includes some fantastic performances outside of Black Panther. He's great as Jackie Robinson in 42. That's like one of my actual like, favorite like sports movies.
Never saw it.
Yeah, it's really good. He does a great job of like... It's not just about the athlete, obviously. It's about the person and what he went through. And you kind of forget watching it. That's Chadwick Boseman. That's kind of how you know you're watching a great actor. Is like,
yeah.
You kind of like, oh yeah, that's an actor like doing.
Yeah,
this.
No,
like,
he was a legit actor, and that was just a legit shocking death because nobody knew he had cancer. Nobody knew.
Yeah, nobody knew, and that was a death that kind of like rocked me when it happened. I was like, what? Like I couldn't believe it because it was just so out of nowhere. So. That is my third pick. At the end, we'll go through some guys that just made that's some people that just missed it for me.
Okay. I have a few picks here that I could make. It's tough. I'm conflicted with this pick, but I think it'll make for interesting conversation. So I'll pick John Belushi for my third one.
He was on my list.
You know why I'm conflicted?
Why are you conflicted?
Because he was going to be in Ghostbusters. It was going to be him and Dan Aykroyd.
That's right.
He died, and so they scrapped whatever the idea they had at first, and they redid the whole thing. It was originally going to be Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, and maybe Eddie Murphy. And so, you know, on the one hand, it sucks that he died. He was freaking hilarious. He was one of those. It was just like Chris Farley or Will Ferrell. Just him being in the room. It was a guy you couldn't even like look at without sort of starting to laugh a little bit. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Him just making a face, you know, making a move with his eyebrows.
Mm-hmm.
He was just so good at that. It's like he could just command your laughter. Like effortlessly. That's what I loved about John Belushi.
And, the girls. How much for the girls? Even just
and he was underrated.
Like
he was underrated, like in terms of just talking. He wasn't like just like you know all about the slapstick. Like he would have characters on SNL where he'd go on these rants on Weekend Update and stuff. He was underrated at that. He was like sneaky genius. You know, he was a complete schlub and like you know he was into drugs and alcohol, obviously. So you wouldn't think that he was a genius, but he truly was a genius. And so like I'm conflicted because you know I didn't want him to die. Then again. You know, Ghostbusters wouldn't have been what it was. Ghostbusters is like my favorite movie, special place in my heart. I've watched it 1,000 bajillion times, and so I wouldn't really want Ghostbusters any other way. But it took John Belushi dying for it to get there. Mm. So, you know, that's a weird conflict in my mind. But you always wonder what it would have been like if he lived and they made Ghostbusters with him and Dan Aykroyd. It probably would have been fine because the Blues Brothers is good. So I'm sure it would have been good, but I don't know if it would have been what it is.
I would agree with that. I would, and it's funny because Slimer is John Belushi.
Yeah, they call him the ghost of John Belushi as a joke.
It's unbelievable. Good list. John Belushi was my number four, and if you took him, that's where I was going to go. You want some other people that were on my list?
Let's do honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions. Bruce Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
33 years old.
Yeah, that's true.
That's crazy that he didn't have a longer career of movies and stunts and all that.
I legit do like some of the old Bruce Lee movies.
Oh, yeah. Andy Kaufman, another one. Just a master of chaos.
He would have been good to have, like, nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. John Hurd. John Hurd played the dad in Home Alone. He played the cop in
Sopranos.
The FBI agent, whatever he was. And then two weird ones from the 90s. James Avery, Uncle Phil. Also Shredder from Turtles.
You know what clip I watched the other day? I forget why I brought it up, but the scene where from Fresh Prince where Will is stuck. He owes money to a pool shark.
I watched the episode the other day.
At the pool hall.
Yeah.
And then Uncle Phil comes in and he pretends to suck. And then all of a sudden he's like, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Break out, Lucille. I say that every now and then when I play my friends in pool. I'll go break out, Lucille. And they just don't know the reference. That was an all-timer. I love that scene.
Yeah. And that's great. And you know what's funny? Family Matters is the exact same scene, but except the grandma's really good at pool. They do the exact same scene.
Really? They do that in sitcoms.
Oh,
they
recycle
plots like crazy.
The other
wasn't Uncle Phil, didn't he make a cameo on Family Matters one time?
Maybe.
I want to say that because that was like a running joke that Uncle Phil and Carl Winslow were the same character.
Yes.
I think one's
a cop, one's a judge.
You know how in Family Matters the end credits would be like a scene? They'd play the credits during a scene?
Of course, yeah.
I think there was one time where Uncle Phil or James Avery just burst through the door and they started like dancing with each other or something like that. I gotta pull that up on YouTube. I'm gonna
Gravy's like wrong house. Find it, just like shut
if I find that I'm making it a promo of the podcast.
I know they do a Full House Family Matters crossover. Steve Urkel comes over to the Tanner household and says, "You got any cheese?" Like that's like a real scene that happened in that show. And five for me. Honorable mentions: Heather O'Rourke, who played the little girl in Poltergeist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and she's so creepy in those movies.
Wait, but she died? When did she? How old?
Oh, she died. She was like a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'll get the exact age, but I believe she died when she was a child.
Wow, because she was in all the Poltergeist movies, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. But I want to say that. Didn't also the other daughter from that die? That she got like killed by like her boyfriend or something like that.
It's almost like the house was built on an Indian burial ground.
For real. Heather O'Rourke died when she was 12 years old.
Oh my god, that's awful.
She had
why? How?
Septic shock.
Oh
yeah.
God.
Yeah. She was. The rumor was that she was going to be in ET, right? Like that was the whole thing. Or no, Drew Barrymore was going to be in Poltergeist, and then Spielberg was like, "Nah, I got a better idea for you," and it was E.T. I think it was one of those. I might be getting crossed up, but yeah,
it's probably a good.
She's
move.
Another one. She's 12 years old. I mean, she was already like a horror movie like star at 12 years old. Like,
wow,
think
dude.
About that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's pretty sad. I didn't know that. Well, you're bumming me out here at the very end.
I mean, it's a morbid topic.
I know. My honorable mention, I had Heath Ledger on my list. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yep, another good one.
Absolutely great actor. And to me, I think his best performances were still ahead of him.
Yes,
you know,
I
like,
agree with that.
I saw the Capote movie that he won the Oscar for.
Have you heard about the murders in Kansas?
Just very annoying. I'm sure it was very spot on in terms of like doing an impression of Truman Capote, but I don't know. I didn't love that. I didn't love the movie The Master with him and Joaquin Phoenix. There's like no plot to it. But he was just great in everything he did. And like it's like a cliche, and it's like, you know, it sounds pretentious to say he's committed. He was a committed actor where it's like you tell him whatever role it is, like he's gonna give you everything and it's gonna be great. And I wanted to see him work with like Scorsese, Tarantino. He really only worked with Paul Thomas Anderson.
What was his last movie?
I don't know if it was actually his last movie, but there was a movie. It might have been The Master, honestly. There was a movie called Before the Devil Knows You're Dead that was, I think the guy that directed it, Sidney Lumet. I think that might have been his last movie. It was him and Ethan
Hawke. I
think
I saw one of
his. Good movie, and he was good. But I don't know if that was his last movie.
I may get my timelines crossed.
The Master might have been his last movie. I'm not sure.
I think I saw a movie in theaters that came out after he had died called like A Most Wanted Man. It was like a crime kind of.
Oh, no. A Most Violent Year? Is that
right? No. It's called A Most Wanted Man. It was like a murder mystery. It was like a murder mystery.
That might have been it.
And he was like, I think, the cop or something. Like, I saw it in theaters one night at like 11 p.m. because I had nothing else to do and I didn't want to go home.
Part of the problem is that like. They die like in the middle of the movie, so their last movie like inevitably is a little screwed up because they didn't finish it. You know what I mean? So that might have been the issue. So Philip Seymour Hoffman and Robin Williams. I mean,
yeah, I wanted to avoid that one because it felt almost like too obvious. Like
it was too it was low on my list.
And he had such a storied catalog,
right? And
already.
it's not like oh, he had so much left to give. Like he already given us so much,
right?
But I think he was trying to make a comeback, but he came down with the Lewy body dementia, which just sort of just ruined his brain, and like he couldn't function anymore. So that's pretty tragic. It would have been great if he had one more good character in him.
A Most Wanted Man. It was the last of Hoffman's films to be finished and premiered before his death.
Oh, he did finish it. Okay.
Yeah, so it's the last one he finished before he died. So it was all right. It was a little weird.
Yeah, they never
good cast.
The final movies of dead actors don't usually live. The Dark Knight, something like The Dark Knight, is rare.
I'm not a big, but it also might be a me thing. I'm not a big espionage like movie guy because I get confused because I'm a big dumb simpleton.
Oh, dude, me too.
I
hate movies where like you can't possibly miss a scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You miss one scene, you lose the whole plot. I tend to hate movies like that.
He was playing at Somerville Theater soon. Dolomite. I was like, what?
The Eddie Murphy thing.
That's so random. Yeah, so that's playing along with Bullet Train. Can't wait to see Bullet Train. Can't wait.
All right, you brought that up. I might have to check that out myself.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think we can call it from there. Good pod, Ty. Welcome back. I'm glad we're back.
Hey.
If you made it this far, thanks. I love you. This is the Sports Hub Underground Podcast. You can get us on Apple Podcasts. You can get us on Spotify, Google Podcasts.
You are so loud.
And you can get us at 95thesportshub.com every single week. Yeah, I'm glad this like audio software used like... You know, has a limit.
Basically, screaming.
Has like a volume limit. So it's, I'm my screaming God. At our listeners for no good reason.
Building's empty.
Our building's empty. Speaking of that, we are moving to the new building, I think, next week, Ty. So, like, we might be in a little bit of a holding pattern in terms of our recording.
Oh, my
location.
God. If I don't have to drive here ever again, that's totally okay with me.
Yeah. I mean, our days of driving here in Dorchester are numbered.
I want to take a sledgehammer to this
building.
Which is a
good thing.
I want to be the one.
I think everyone wants to go full office space on this building. It was funny. Like, yesterday was the last day in the main studio for a lot of our honor shows, and they kept doing, like, a fake, like, I will remember. And it's like, yeah, we got no memories.
No,
yeah, nothing really to it with this building.
This building has sucked
location.
From the moment we got here.
The building I don't care about, but the location is just
yeah.
Brutal.
I had to stop in the middle of three lengths of traffic today to try to get over to this parking lot. Either that or sit at eight red lights and wait 20 minutes to get in the building.
Well, what's wrong? You have to almost die when you. What's
yeah,
the big deal?
It's unbelievable. But
the new building. It's going to be a nice brand new building next week, I think. So I don't know when. I don't know where we're going to record from. We might have to do a Zoom episode for a week or so. I don't know. We have to find out. We have to get a tour of the building and a rundown of how everything works. Because I'm not an expert. I can't just walk up to a board and know how to work it. So I need to get a little tutorial from freaking Matt McCarthy or someone to show me how to do it. Hardy, I don't know, Fred Touch or someone. Someone give me a crash course on how to run a board. So because I'm probably going to need that. It's going to be a new state-of-the-art studio. It's not just. This room where it's all set up and we just have to sit and press record. But I think our faithful list, anyone who's made it this far in the pod is probably interested in that topic. But I will stop rambling. Ty, do you have any closing thoughts for us?
I don't.
Good. You never will. I hope you never do.
Never will.
The day you have closing thoughts is the day the world implodes on itself. And it feels like that's what's happening. All right. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you again next week.
Back BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.